those search lights up on the towers right now. Move, move.
I listen to 2ARM 92.1 FM in the car and at work for great tunes and community news.
Hello, I'm Herb and welcome to Community Spotlight. Each week I try and bring in somebody into the studio who has a story to tell, a journey, an event, organisation. And today I've got most of those covered with Benjamin Field. Good morning, Benjamin.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Well, thanks for coming in. A bit cool morning and you've driven all the way from Gunnedah this morning.
Yeah, it was a nice drive. Plenty of roadworks.
Yep. Now, you're the principal for Biobank Seed in Urala with your father, Steve.
Correct, yes.
We will get on to the Biobank Native Seed and Native Seeds a little bit later, but I just want to first go into a bit of your background. So, you were born Christchurch, but you came to New England at Woolbrook.
Yeah, that's right. Dad got a job on a farm. And we grew up amongst the trees out there, and we really enjoyed that way of life.
So Urala Central School for primary?
Yeah, we went from Woolbrook across to a property called East Lake that was a bit closer to Urala, and that's where I did my schooling in Urala right up till year 12.
Then you went visual arts in Toowoomba.
Yeah, that's right. I thought I wanted to be an art teacher. Quickly found out that I wasn't such a great artist amongst a lot of other talented people, so maybe a little bit of a turn in my direction after that.
So yeah, that brought you back to Armidale to take up with your father and your mother in Fields Native Nursery.
Yeah, that's right. And we went from being a retail nursery to a wholesale native tree nursery, and out of that came a lot of tree planting work for landholders that wanted to warm up their property and get more trees back into the environment. So for a long time, we worked for landholders.
So just tell me, and I ask this question of everybody, that formative years in your sort of 8 to 12-year-old, what was it that sort of, that you can look back on and think, well, that's what sort of pushed me toward native plants and seed collecting and planting trees across the New England?
Yeah, it's actually a really good question because you don't know at the time, you don't really know what's steering you in life. But growing up on particularly East Lake property that was run by Gordon Williams, he was quite an early ecological thinker himself. And so he wanted to grow trees on his place where others were clearing them. So it's just about growing up in the bush, having the freedom to get around in the bush and not be stifled by a normal way of living, I suppose. Seeing nature every day, maybe that had a very big impact on me.
I'm sure it did. And many people who work in the environmental field have a similar story, particularly their early life in the bush or parents that took them out walking or a whole lot of things, that connection with nature. So we certainly have that in common. So I just want to just jump to something else, is seed collecting. Before we get into the native seed collecting, now a lot of people collect seed or keep seed from that favourite pumpkin that they get to makes a lovely pumpkin soup, and their garden then becomes based on their seed store that they have for from the previous season instead of buying seed. So have you got any advice for people who want to collect those good seeds and store them?
Firstly, I'm not an expert on vegetable seeds. I'm an expert on native seeds, but I'll have a stab at it. So if you're going to collect and store any seeds, you need to obviously clean it down so that you can dry them out. And then it would be about storing them at a humidity level that's low and also to store them in a cool area. You're saying you'd think around about below 10 degrees would be a good temperature to store them at, and between 7 and 12% humidity would be good if you're wanting to store for a long time. If you wanted to give the seeds as big a shelf life as possible, that would probably be my advice.
So at the bottom of the fridge?
Sure.
So I know with my seeds, the example again, if I get a nice pumpkin, clean the seeds down, put them in an airtight container, label them and store them in the bottom of the fridge and in those containers. And you can actually buy ready-made containers. They talk about heirloom seeds. An heirloom seed collecting and growing of heirloom plants is sort of all based on the sharing of seeds, but also the storing of those seeds.
You'd probably just have to be careful that mold didn't get into it. If it was just in a normal fridge, maybe the humidity level's not quite right for longevity there. Keep an eye on that, but there's different ways to monitor that.
Well, I think the thing is, though, if you're using them fairly quickly and not storing them for generations,
yeah, correct,
or decades, I think you're quite safe. Let's just jump to, you just had a recent forum. It was called, you had a Urella forum. Tell me what that was all of. The Native Seed Supply Forum was held on the 27th to 29th of May, so that was last week. So we're hot off the press. Now, I'll just read a little bit from the media release. It will focus on strengthening Australia's native seed supply chain as demand surges from carbon farming project, biodiversity programs and large-scale environmental restoration initiatives. Now, I think that says it all, but let's unpack why we've got this problem first, from your perspective.
So the mining industry particularly is highly regulated, as we all know, and they have a responsibility to hand back their lease as an ecological handback. So there's a lot of seed that goes into that industry already. So when government talks about initiatives going forward that will draw even more native seed from native and wild collections, we see that there is going to be a real bottleneck in seed supply. So then the conversation needs to be about, well, how can we scale up? How can we come up with other options for native seed supply that won't put a damaging weight on the wild bushland itself?
So that just sort of sparks a little bit of an interest for me about how native seed comes into the biobank. So where does the native seed come from? You know, are people licensed to collect seed? Where they get the seed? What's that process of seed coming in? You say there's a bottleneck, or potentially a bottleneck, which I can see out the other end with planting of native plants from those seeds, but how does the seed actually get into the biobank?
So at the moment, our business works very hard with people that are largely hidden in the landscape that have the skills to collect seed. So we're working very hard with them to help them meet what's called flora bank protocols, which looks after the bushland seed that's collected so that the bushland doesn't get damaged, but also so that there's good quality genetic collections being made. That's important because if we're turning seed into, say, millions of seedlings, they need to have the genetic width to support good diversity. We don't want to be putting plants back into the native landscape that are low on genetics and not diverse.
So what you're meaning, though, is that if you're collecting seed like mugger ironbark, for example, and it naturally occurred, and there's plantings all over the place, would that mean that you would collect seed and store seed not from the one location, but then from a number of locations, so you had that diversity?
Yeah, true. Yes, and we keep all our provenance information so that we can achieve that. It's important to at least have a concept about genetics so that you can help diversify. Yep. So seed batching is an important thing to do.
So just go back to the nuts and bolts.
Mm-hmm.
How is seed collected?
Yeah.
Is it a slingshot over up into the air over a branch and then cut onto a canvas? Or how do you get seed? Or people climb up a tree? I don't know.
Yeah, we don't climb up trees. Not very consistent with OH&S these days. But we do a lot of travel to find seed from different areas. We stop on TSRs where possible. We collect from private land where we make connections with landholders. We collect on site on mining biodiversity offsets areas. There's a variety of ways that we can collect from. Other groups, though, have different methodology. We have our own. We like to do a lot of travel just to get that diversity in biobank seed storage facility. But we also nurture relationships with others that have the ability to collect large amounts of seed in their own ways, and people come up with their own methodologies. But it all still needs to be alongside flora bank guidelines so that we're not damaging the environment.
So can you tell me what the practices are? Collecting the seed, physically collecting the seed.
It's actually a really soft measure. So we're not at all harsh on the environment. Most of the work we do is like stripping with our fingers the seed pods from an acacia or stripping with our hands the berries from a native olive. So it's not very harsh. You're not really getting in there and clear felling or anything silly like that. Just secateurs, a pole saw where necessary. I don't necessarily love getting out the pole saw just because it's usually extremely hot temperatures and it's just another tool that wears you out. But secateurs and gloves, that's as rudimentary as you can get.
So you know where you seed potentially because of your connections and relationships you make across the landscape. I suppose from the biology of the plants, you know when they're going to be seeding, so the likelihood, and I suppose you have to make those visits to check that the seed's ready to go. Can you collect from national parks or state forests?
National parks is very, very difficult. Sometimes you can get a very special license around the threatened flora area that will help get you on there, but it is very difficult and a long process to achieve that. State forest, totally different. That's quite easy. You just need to contact them and let them know who you are and go through the licensing process, but that's not a difficult one. You just need to be specific about where you're going to be for the year coming.
So just back to that licensing then. The seed collectors have to be licensed, is that correct?
So at the moment we have protocols, but there's no regulator checking if somebody is licensed. So there's no actual physical license. You do the flora bank course if you're lucky, because there's no funding to actually make that happen at the moment, and that's another change that really needs to be made. We need to be able to get more people trained for this if we are going to get more people involved.
So we might just talk about when the seed comes in from those collections, or you've collected yourself or your father or your connection of people have collected the seed, where does it come in to be stored? Some underground secret bunker somewhere, I assume?
not quite. We bring in the rough material from the environment, and then it's about having to figure out how that seed can be cleaned down, processed, dried out, so that it can be stored in a clean environment, and that gets stored in our refrigerators at Biobank Seed Headquarters Laboratory in Yooralla. I've also got one down in Gunnedah too. Sometimes we even use our clients to get their own storage facility as well.
Is there any seeds that are actually quite expensive and you have to buy them in for the upcoming season to do plantings? Or there's a limited cost in most seeds?
Native seed in general is expensive, but it's worth it too. And we need to put a high price on it because it is difficult to get. So when I'm buying seed off other practitioners, for example, I won't try to drive them down to a low point at all. I respect that it takes a lot of effort and knowledge too to be able to collect different species and identify them correctly. So I'm more than happy to buy seed at a price that suits them also. Keenly aware of their needs there.
Well, particularly in that the seeds are so hard to get, I suppose, physically, but also some of the trees wouldn't be actually producing that much abundance of seed either, because I think that one of the things I read, it's variable, it depends on the climatic conditions, whether they're seeding, how much they're seeding. So it's a highly variable boom and bust, almost like our climatic environment, a boom and bust sort of cycle.
Yes, yeah, certainly. And another big thing that can weigh in is the pollinators. So if a pollinator that's really necessary for cross-pollination and seed set to happen is missing, then that area just is not going to produce any seed. And you'll have to drive, you know, further afield to find a suitable patch to collect from.
All right then, I think we've actually done a fair bit about the actual seed and the storage. Let's talk about this back to this forum, the Native Seed Supply Forum. Where did it come from? Why was it established? And who helped you on the process to get the forum? And then we'll talk about the outcomes at the end. But just tell us about the path you took. When did you start?
It actually started, I wanted to set up an end of year review with my working crew. I just wanted to help them see how much good we've done in ecological restoration. And so I wanted a guest speaker. And it came to my mind after seeing her on LinkedIn that Dr. Kit Prendergast was an expert in pollinators and native bees. So that's a gap of information that I have. I wanted to know more about pollinators and how we can help introduce pollinators where they're not there. And so I invited her to come to talk.
So where is she from?
She's from Western Australia.
Oh, very good. Long trip?
Yes. Yeah, it was. It was a very long trip for many of the ones that came from that area of the world.
So you've got your guest speaker on pollination?
Yeah. So once we got her involved, then it just occurred to me, well, why not get others that have specialized interests and together in the same room so that we can really explore some of the topics that we don't have a lot of understanding about as a company. But then on top of that, I thought, well, wouldn't it be great to get for the first time maybe practitioners involved as well? So we've got academics, we've got scientists, we've got government people in the room, but we've also got the people that can potentially help scale up in the seed supply chain.
And I see that you had a number of local supporters to put on the forum: the Southern New England Landcare Group, Euralla Shire Council, ASIN, who are the New England Solar at Euralla, New England Energy by ASIN, and the New South Wales Government.
Yeah, thanks to ASIN particularly for really supporting us there with some sponsorship money. It certainly helped get this up and running so that we could be confident. SNELC was really instrumental in helping us, and so was Euralla Shire Council too, in just helping us to understand what it would take, the nitty-gritty, the details around setting up a forum like this so that it was successful.
So I'm assuming it was successful. And I'll just go back to some of the principal drivers was that there's environmental restoration projects that government are pushing which need seed and native plants. And what you're highlighting by the forum is that there's a bit of a bottleneck. Supporting those seed collectors, I suppose, and you talked about the training and getting more people involved in seed collecting, the number and quantity of seed that's come in, you talked about the cost of seed. Was there something that came out of, or a number of things that came out of the forum that might put you on the path of where you have to work to improve that bottleneck?
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about licensing, so opening up land that will be available or should be available to potential collectors. Training needs to happen. So they would be, they're scalable ideas. There's a platform for teaching it. The Flora Bank guidelines are already there. So there's no reason why we can't teach it successfully. We will need help doing that financially speaking. Grant money needs to be accessed to help that along. There's ideas that came out of forum around seed production areas that are a highly scalable idea. So instead of drawing seed from in wild collection context, we would then be creating farms with good genetic quality so that we can farm the seed. But some parameters around those SPAs need to be made first so that we can do that correctly the first time.
Gotcha. Now, I just noticed that you did have a representative from the Q Wakehurst, which was Catherine Isles. Now, I'll just note that Kate Blanchett, a much-loved Australian actress and film producer, she is the ambassador for Q Wakehurst, and she's the Australian Seed Bank Partnership is what it's all about, and they've just celebrated 15 years. Now, can they help in any way? Was Catherine have any ideas from her organisation how you could help?
She certainly can help, and as can a lot of different entities. Everybody has the potential to help. We're starting from a very fractured industry, really. We don't talk enough, and that was really one of the reasons why to get this forum happening, is just so that the start of the conversation can be made. I wouldn't say that the forum finished any conversation that was needed. It was just the start.
The start of the conversation is the important part on any journey, I think.
It certainly is. And getting the combination of people in there involved and motivated to consider it on an ongoing level was very important. I'm confident that there'll be more forums to come.
No, I think that's the way to go, with more forums and bring this issue to the fore, particularly if all these projects have been pushed out, all these renewable energy projects, the mining rehabilitation that you talked about. If there's not enough seed to do it, you've got to get some path forward and planning to make it happen. I think this forum is, as you said, the first step in the process. Now, do you think any people went away with a positive approach at any actions that they might take?
Yeah, I think plenty of people took positives away. We finished the forum day on the Thursday with a workshop, and it was the style of the workshop used the law of two legs, where if you didn't belong at a table, if you weren't adding or learning something from the particular topic that you were talking about, you had the responsibility to move onto a different table and add something there. So there was 9 different topics, and the brainstorming that went around that came up with some really important insight from the different people that were invited.
Well, I think that sounds like it was a very productive forum for your first one, and very successful.
Yeah, I feel confident that there'll be outcomes that are implemented directly out of it. I'm working with a landholder at the moment to target a specific species that's difficult to find in the landscape. So we're growing that in a farmed context, so a seed production area. The genetics have been addressed to a reasonable degree, and hopefully out of that partnership, out of that commercial relationship, come another player in the local area that can feed into the seed supply chain.
No, it all sounds very positive, a positive path to take, Ben. Well, I think we might just wrap that up. I'm going to invite your father in, hopefully next week, to come in and talk about his view on seeds and planting and his journey along that path.
Boy, so that'll be an interesting conversation.
Yeah, no, I think it will. And you're not the only one that's told me that. Thank you. All success to you, and congratulations for putting on the forum. Very important step to take in planting native seeds across New England. And I'll just put a point from Kate Blanchett. She said, "Life begins with seeds, and so does our best chance to save it." Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Herb.
And that is Community Spotlight.
Broadcast, then podcast. If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast. I listen to 2ARM 92.1 FM in the car and at work for great tunes and community news.